Good afternoon. The Ways and Means Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the last meeting of May 3rd before us. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes to those minutes? Seeing none, Representative Seifert moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, you can probably say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we actually have three bills on the calendar today. We have not yet received the transportation bill, and since we have not received the transportation bill, we cannot do the transportation bill. So we have the two bills of Representative Bradley's and the one of Representative Sikora. If you are here for the transportation bill, we will presumably receive it soon and have another meeting in the near future. With that, Representative Bradley moves that House File 3697 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me explain for the benefit of members what the roadmap looks like. I have no intention of bringing the entire omnibus health bill before the committee, so I will have an amendment that would be just this one article out of the omnibus health bill. And that is an amendment that would deal strictly with the federal deficit reduction, the compliance area that we need to. And it's as was passed out of the Health Committee. Once we complete our work on that, then I also have another amendment which has three items that come from the Jobs Committee, which are three items there, again, for federal deficit. So it will turn specifically and only into Federal Deficit Reduction Act compliance. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I would like to move the DE1 amendment, and that is the Article 3 of the Omnibus Health Bill.
Representative Bradley moves the DE1 amendment. It's a discussion to the DE1 amendment. Any discussion? Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, I believe members should have a spreadsheet that is just a two-page, perhaps front and back is the way it's oriented. I'm not sure. That shows the overall fiscal effect of this. This is largely additional staff to do some workarounds, to do modifications to health match, some administrative matches from federal dollars, and so forth. So I'm not going to go through that. I'd be happy to review further if people want to. The net effect of all of those changes, ins and outs and so forth, is a savings in general fund of $1.2 million, and I will share with the committee my intentions there. And then it has a net impact to the healthcare access fund of about $1 million, $1.032 to be more exact, of spending. On that spreadsheet, the $1.2 million, the back side of it or the second page of it, has expenditures in basically four areas as the way we would spend that $1.2 million. One part would be to provide some money to the area agencies on the enrollment in Medicare Part D. That's $100,000 for that. We had in the health bill a critical access dental language that in order to implement the language so that the critical access dentist would have a better handle on what's coming for the future, and that was costing $53,000. And then we have a pharmacy payment reform advisory committee and study, and that's basically also to take care of the oncoming Federal Deficit Reduction Act changes, and that's $60,000. And then the major part, if you recall in the budget bill carried by Chairman Knobloch, we had $100,000 in there for the University of Minnesota Mayo Bioscience Partnership. This adds a $900,000 to bring us to an even $1 million. And remember now, this was an $18 million original request. But at least this, I think, puts us a little bit better marker for our bill. And, Mr. Chair, members, that leaves then an additional $87,000 on the bottom line. And I'll leave it at that and see if there's any questions.
Okay. Discussion for Representative Bradley's DE1 amendment. Any discussion? Representative Silberger.
Just one point of clarification. I thought one of the first bills we put through here, maybe it hasn't passed yet, gone to the governor, was to deal with the Medicare Part D implementation.
Representative Bradley.
I'm sure, Mr. Silberger, you're right, and that's different. That was $570,000 to actually take care of being the payer of last resort. This is actually money going to the area agencies to help in the support of our constituents who call in.
Okay, thank you.
Other discussion, Representative Huntley.
Just on that point,
their phone calls have gone up 2 to 3 times over what they were before. So they haven't been able to do what they usually do, and this will help them address that problem.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Silver,
are they adding full-time people for this then?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Silver, for full disclosure, let me be honest, because the area agencies actually had requests that was in the multi-millions of dollars. The Senate, as last I checked anyway, felt as though, well, it'll sort of all be over May 15th. That's kind of the deadline. I don't think that's the case. So as much as anything, I want at least a marker in here. So going into conference committee, we've got something we can do to move from. We have more limited resources, but I thought it was important. So we haven't identified exactly how it would be spent, but to be honest, $100,000 spread across our area agencies is not a lot of money.
Okay, thank you.
See no further discussion. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, then I would like to move the A47 amendment, and this brings into place three items from the Jobs Committee that are also Federal Deficit Act reduction compliance items.
Representative Bradley moves the A47 amendment. Discussion to that amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fulbert.
In Article 2, the route before it was here was in the jobs bill. Is that correct?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, I don't see Representative Gunther here. I was specifically
right
asked
on cue, Representative Gunther.
To add to this items from, and I don't think that in the jobs bill it was one article. But staff, our research staff, went through the entire jobs bill and found these three items to be those items that are required to be compliant. So that's the way I understand it. And Representative Gunther can perhaps correct me if I've had that wrong.
You got it exactly right.
Thank you.
Chairman, Representative Brandon.
Very good. Thanks.
Any other discussion of the A47 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A47 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Discussion of the bill as amended. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bradley, does this now, this new bill, include the 5-year federal look back?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, yes, it does. As a matter of fact, the 5-year look back was already in statute, but we were not permitted to continue it to actually implement it until there was federal allowance, and the Federal Deficit Act now allows that.
Other discussion. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, on this is on the amendment A47. On page 2, line 2.35 and 2.36. And then continuing through on page 3, 3.3. Could you explain to me what that is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, as I understand what this amounts to, as in current law, counties have a cap on the amount they can charge as administrative costs, and that's so that they don't just go outlandishly. What this allows is an exemption if it's contributing to, and I get the wording right here, an approved supported employment, unpaid work, or community work experience. So instead of carving an exception out where this can help our welfare initiatives,
okay. Representative MC.
And thank you. And also, Representative, it mentions the commissioner. Who?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative MC, that would be the Commissioner of Human Services.
Any further questions on this bill? Seeing none, the chair will renew for Representative Bradley. Representative Rukavina. Didn't see you back there.
How'd you get over there? Representative Bradley, just to Representative Greiling's question, a clarification on the 5-year then. So is there going to be like a period where anybody that's caught between 3 and 5 years is phased in, or is it going right to 5 years?
Representative Bradley,
sure.
Would you like to...
Rukavina, I'd like to be really sure I get that right. So.
Bring down a lifeline here, all right? You could introduce yourself to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kim Carlin from Minnesota Department of Human Services.
Ms. Carlin, did you hear my question?
Yes. The answer is yes. This will be phased in. Similarly, in I think it was 2003, there was a change in the look-back period from 30 to 36 months, and that look-back period was phased in into the future. So this will actually start 36 months from now. We'll add a month, 37, and then another month, 38, until we come up to 60 months in the year 2011.
Representative Rucabina?
Well, no, Mr. Chair, I'm glad it's phased in, but I'm a little disappointed that we're going through it. But, you know, I think in tax committee on Thursday, Representative Broad, if I'm not mistaken, it was Representative Broad that offered an amendment to conform to federal law and what you can pass on to defendants. And I think, does it, Representative Eric, go to $6 million next year? And I think it's sad that you can give $6 million away, but you can't pass on a $40,000 house to somebody. So.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a fair point. I would, however, also point out that this bill, probably a third of the wording has to do with a long-term care partnership, and this allows people with long-term care insurance to protect their assets, so we are trying to give people who take some responsible action ways to protect their assets as well.
Yeah. Any further questions, Representative Rucavina?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't want to prolong this.
Okay.
I'll wait for the floor.
I have Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, on page 3, lines 19 to 24, it looks like we have a new fee. On line 22, it's called an annual federal collections fee of $25. I'm intrigued by the name federal collections fee. Is that a fee that we're forced to collect and send to the federal government, or is it one that the feds have mandated that we collect? Where's the impetus for this fee, and where does the money go?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, this is a federal requirement, and if you notice, it's those cases where we collect more than $500. The net proceeds of that go back to the counties for their child support activities. So it's a zero fiscal impact to the state.
Representative Biskins?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley, why would the federal legislation mandate that we collect this fee? Why wouldn't they just leave it up to the state and local unit of government as to who's going to pay this money? It's curious that the feds would say, you must collect this fee, but you guys get to keep it. I'm not quite sure I get the logic there.
Representative Bradley?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, do you want the honest to goodness answer? I don't know.
Thank you.
Wonderful Republicans in Congress.
Representative Clark, I think you had your question up.
Yeah, I think I just had a quick question. I didn't hear all of what you were saying about the benefit of having long-term care insurance in regard to this. Could you just say again what it does?
Representative Bradley?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, this is something that on a bipartisan level we've been working for some time, so that people who do purchase legitimate long-term care insurance can use that to protect their assets. And so that's kind of what this does. It does define what amounts to long-term care insurance. It sets up the right verbiage. It requires it puts some requirements on the agents to sell good products, defines that. And then in the end, what it provides for people who have it to have protections of at least a portion of their assets, up to at least a portion of what the long-term care is worth.
And Mr. Chair?
And Representative Abler has worked a lot on this. He could probably add a lot more to that.
Representative Abler, to that point?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, this is actually a really good part of the bill. It allows, if you buy a qualifying policy, which mostly includes that it's inflation indexed, that you can have dollar-for-dollar protection of that amount of asset. And so what you do when you begin to use some services after you send down when you go to the nursing home and you can appropriate certain amount of resource of your assets
up to the limit of your policy. $100,000, you can put $100,000 of your home set aside that cannot be tapped. So when you currently get state aid, you have to spend down to $3,000 of the assets. Under this, if you have this qualifying policy, you can spend down to $103,000 of assets. And those $100,000 of additional assets are protected at the time of recovery. So if you never spend $100,000, then that all is safe. If you go beyond that, then the part beyond $100,000, $103,000 is recoverable. So it's a way to at least get some protection. You both have the insurance, and then you have the protection for your assets.
So,
for your state.
Representative Clark.
So, Mr. Chairman, or Representative Adler, whoever wants to answer this, can you tell me what the average cost would be to protect, let's say, the example used of $100,000? What is the cost of the insurance to do that?
Representative Adler or Representative Bradley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can give you a personal example. My wife and I, about a year and a half ago, purchased, and we've been looking for a long time trying to find satisfactory, even before this. And on our policies, we are at advanced age. We're over 60. We're about $1,000. And it's a good policy, very good policy. Index.
And it protects.
Representative Clark?
I think it starts out at, let's see if I remember right, I want to say either $150 or $180 a day, and then also index each year as far as what it's able to cover, and covers not only nursing homes but other options.
Well, it covers that, but in terms of protecting assets, what is the level of asset protection that you get for $1,000?
Well, Mr. Representative Clark, the long-term care partnership is different than long-term care insurance. What Representative Abler is describing is, even after, if for some reason I was one of the people who was in a nursing home 15 years, for example, and exhausted the benefits of my long-term care policy, then the asset protection is what was talked about. So I in addition to being able to pay for a lot of it, even after I go off it and I'm now on medical assistance, a portion of my assets are protected. To the amount, I think, as Representative Abel described it, to the amount of value of it. So I'm getting not only coverage, but I'm also getting additional protection.
And your example was $1,000 a year?
Yes, for my wife and for myself each. Mm-hmm. So it was $2,000 between the two of us. Mm-hmm. There, did I put a lot of personal information on the line that I probably shouldn't have?
Well, thank God. I'm just trying to get a sense of what the scale is. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on the bill? Seeing Representative Dempsey.
Mr. Chairman, this isn't on the bill, but it's just a question that I would like to have answered if it's possible. And that is why doesn't the state give an incentive? Now, I know we got the $100, but that's hardly any drop in the bucket. Why doesn't the state, rather than constantly keep funding this program, that program, this program, that program, and we don't know whether any of them work anyway, my point is why isn't there a significant incentive to have people purchase long-term care insurance?
Representative Dempsey, I'm a big fan of long-term care insurance. We do have $100, and that is, I mean, because remember, that's per person. This long-term care partnership thing that we just gotten into also is a way to provide people with additional incentive. I happen to believe, however, that the most important incentive is to help people recognize how long-term care insurance is every bit as important as having insurance on your home, insurance on your car, insurance on your life. And we're getting better and better at that. I think as much as anything, it's cultural. And we need to move to a culture where people recognize that it's important to protect their assets with this kind of insurance.
I know when I...
Go ahead, Representative Dempsey.
I can remember when I purchased a policy for myself and then and the wife in regard to that, and it's pretty expensive, but I think more people would possibly take a look at that if there was a little bit more of an incentive to do that, and at a younger age.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dempsey, I think that's exactly what's happened in the marketplace. A lot better products, more affordable. Just the fact that more people are doing it these days, and I think you're finding people who specialize only in long-term care insurance. That's a good sign.
I thought I saw Representative Otremba before we vote. Representative Otremba?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Representative Abler can help me out here. We've been talking about houses, but we haven't talked about small businesses and farms and how that would work. What would be the maximum dollar amount for assets in one of those situations that would protect them.
Representative Abler?
Maybe the staff knows the cap. I don't think there's a cap, but I know it's dollar for dollar of whatever you bought. So if you bought the crummiest policies are like $100,000 of the value or something, and some are unlimited lifetime benefits. In that case, you would never probably get to your become on medical assistance. So, but it's tied to whatever kind of policy you buy. If you buy a better policy that has $300,000 worth of benefits, then you could expect $300,000 worth of farm, business, whatever assets you determine. You and your planners can determine when you begin to go on medical assistance, what kind of assets you want to get. And so, when you get down to $300,000 worth of assets, if you have a $300,000 policy, there's $3,000 you can have anyway, so $303,000 of the assets you can have and then go on medical assistance and your recovery is protected. They can't recover against the $300,000.
Well,
Representative Tromba?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, obviously most of our farms and small businesses are worth a lot more than the $300,000, and so what kind of dollar amount, I don't know what kind of a dollar amount you would have to do to protect, because I, you know, in my case, I have kids and their father isn't around to help out, so what kind of dollar amount would that cost?
Anybody that would like to, do you want to take a stab at that, Representative Abler? Or?
Just a thought, and this is all part of the estate planning. It gives people one more tool. It doesn't solve everybody's problem. But your planner would say, you really better buy a $500,000 policy because you might want to have enough protection there. And then you have to kind of calculate, do you plan to use that much policy? I mean, you have to actually use the $300,000 worth of policy. You know, that's the challenge. Do you want to be insurance poor, or do you want to buy a lot of insurance? No.
Well,
Representative Gunther, to that point?
To that point, you and my wife, you're a little younger than my wife. We aren't on television, are we?
We are.
Be careful.
Sorry about that, Nance. But anyway, hers costs about $700 a month, and it covers pretty much everything. She could have bought a policy for less than that. She just bought one, and she found out I'm too sick to have one, so I didn't get to buy one. Diabetes isn't a thing you want to go there with. But she has one that's about $700.
Well, and
that's the Cadillac.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, that's another issue. You know, I'm a cancer survivor, so it's pretty tough for me to get a lot of insurance, period. And so I just want some help here because I'm not the only one in this situation. There's a lot of people out there like that. And we all pay taxes. We're assets to the community. Because of, by the grace of God, it could be any one of us.
And it will be. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
I went and bought a life insurance policy, so after I die, she could afford to pay for all my bills.
Okay. Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Earhart, did you have...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to... What you're talking about is individual estate planning, and you have to talk with the experts and determine which way you should go and what you make determinations. And there's nobody here that can plan your estate for you at this meeting. So that's what you need to do is get that... go to a bank at a trust officer or go to a estate planning attorney or accountant or someone that does that. So that's what I got to say about it.
Good advice, Representative Earhart. Any other questions on the bill? Seeing none, the Representative Bradley renews his motion that House Bill 3697 be recommended to pass as amended, be referred to the General Register. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Bill's passed and it is moved to the General Register. The next bill is House Bill 2935. Representative Bradley moves that House Bill 2935 be recommended to pass, be referred to the General Register. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has had good bipartisan support in our Health Committee and all places we've gone through, and the Tax Committee as well. It struck me a few years ago when we used some of the surplus to buy down temporarily the provider tax, or some of us call the sick tax, that it had automatic provisions to increase again when it was needed to. But we have no provision when there's a growing surplus that we don't have commitments to do. for the provider tax to be incrementally reduced. And all this does, quick process review with you, this is what would be called a contingent reduction. It would be September 1st in the odd number of years. The Commissioner of Revenue, who would do an outlook on the future, the two-year future of the Health Care Access Fund, if it's seen that there will be a surplus, the Commissioner is authorized over just those 2 years to reduce the provider tax in increments of one-tenth. It would automatically kick back again after the second year, so we're not putting any longer-term risk into the program. But I think, I know this much, I know my personal dentist anyway, and some of my other health care providers are happy to see an initiative like this.
Very good. Questions? Representative Gunther.
Representative Bradley, my dentist gladly, cheerfully looks at me and says, you know, I'm charging the 2% anyway. Does that mean incrementally they're going to reduce my rates?
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, if I remember right, and Representative Gunther, current law allows providers to list the expense of provider tax. If he's being honest with you, I know he would want to be honest with you, he would list it as 1.5% and only charge you that amount. Some of the providers would, by the way, say it's not practical for them to list it, so they've been eating it.
Any further discussion? Representative maybe Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair, we've supported, or I have supported this in the past. We could argue over whether how we want to spend that surplus, and I'd prefer to use it for expansion of Minnesota Care, but I don't seem to win that fight. And so currently the money has been siphoned off and used for other things. In the last 4 years, about $580 million have been taken and put basically into the general fund, which I think is inappropriate use of that money. And so if we're not going to protect that fund, then I think we ought to reduce the tax and not use the Minnesota Care tax as a way to fix the state's budget problems. So I would support this amendment for this bill.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, wasn't the tax scheduled to go down to 1.5% a few years ago?
Yeah.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, in a sense, we bought it down using surplus temporarily, but we had language when we bought it down that meant as soon as the projection was that it was need there, it would incrementally go back up again.
Well,
and,
Mr. Chairman, I think in the, over the years, though, if there's been a surplus, there hasn't been a need for it to go up.
I'm sorry, Mr. Representative Holbrook, I didn't catch the last part of that.
Over, if I recall right, 4 years ago, the law was at 1.5%, and maybe I'm mistaken.
Was that a blink on, Representative Bradley?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, it was blinked down with an automatic blink up again once it was needed to do that. So that's why it came back again. It was, we put in one-time money from the surplus so we could temporarily buy it down, and then the minute that that surplus money was not available, in a sense, to subsidize it, it blinked back up again.
Mr. Chairman, I thought there was a big surplus in the health care access fund that was from that was transferred to the general fund. I mean, we've spent, it can't be a negative if you're transferring $580 million, but I think we should reduce it.
Okay.
So if we don't have...
Any other questions? Seeing none, the Representative Bradley renews his motion that House Bill 2935 be recommended to pass and be placed in the general register. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Bill's passed. Congratulations, Representative Bradley. Representative Sikora has the last bill. Representative Sikora moves that House Bill 2890 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration because I believe it is a constitutional amendment. So it has to go to the Rules Committee, Representative Sikora.
That's true, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. First, I'll just explain what this bill is. This is part of a bill that you've heard before, which would elect senators on four-year terms, staggered terms. But in this bill, House members also serve for 4 years and serve staggered terms as well. So how this would work is that after 2012, after we've had redistricting, there would be a general election in which everybody would run, and as the bill states, at that election, senators elected from odd-numbered districts and representatives from even-numbered districts would be elected to two terms. So they'd serve, they would serve two terms and then 2 4-year terms. And then at the same time, you know, at the end of the line, some of them would serve 2 4-year terms and then a 2-year term, just like the Senate does now, only the House would be essentially doing the same thing. And in order to make sure that there was somebody being elected in each district every year, the senators would run from odd-number districts and both the reps from the even-number districts. So if you had your senator up, you wouldn't have your reps up that year, but if your two reps, if the two reps were up in that district, you wouldn't have your senator up. So there would always be somebody up for election, up for re-election, so that the voters would have an opportunity to throw somebody out. You know, which is kind of the reason that we have 2-year terms for some people. And, you know, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to make it easier on myself, folks. It's because you all know I'm not running again. But kind of looking ahead and thinking of what's happened over the last 12 years, we get busier and busier and busier here. We have less and less time for family or for other priorities, or some of us are trying to hold down jobs even in the private sector, and that makes it pretty difficult. So if you look at what's happening to us with the workload growing all the time, we have less and less family time, less and less time to hold down another job, and definitely this isn't enough to make a living for your family in most cases. So I think it's going to gradually make it harder and harder to recruit good people to run for office just because of this whole situation that we find ourselves in where we are busier and busier at all times. So, you know, people say to me, it's interesting, because there are some states, by the way, with 4-year House terms as well as 4-year Senate terms. North Dakota is one of them. People will say, oh, I wouldn't have your job for anything. How can you stand it over there? And I hear that an awful lot lately. I'm sure you all are hearing it. Or, are you up for a re-election again? Didn't I just see your signs all over the place a few months ago? No, that was 2 years ago, actually. I think people would be quite content with us running every 4 years, quite honestly. And if you look at it, most school boards are 4-year terms, council members, etc. They're running for 4-year terms, not 2-year terms. So as long as the voters could throw half of us out at a time, I think that would be pretty fair for voters. So with that, I'll leave it. In each case, though, there's always going to be some good people who will still be in place, who know some of the history of the place, who will continue on and be able to focus on policy rather than always thinking in terms of the next election, which is kind of what the House does. We're always thinking in terms of the next election. And it becomes more and more evident, I think, here that we are always thinking in terms of the next election. So with that, if you have questions for me, I'd be happy to answer. If I can.
Questions for Representative Sikora?
Just one question. We got a Senate author?
Yeah, there's a Senate author.
Progress?
No, it has has not made progress. The Senate Elections Committee chose not to move it forward. Surprise, surprise.
Other discussion. All right. With that, Representative Sikora renews her motion that House File 2890 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, there will not be a meeting tomorrow. There will be a meeting on Wednesday. We will send out the agenda. I assume the paperwork will be processed for the transportation bill by then. And we would, I guess, also be taking up the lands bill, possibly Representative Gunther's jobs bill, and some other items to be added. So we'll let you know, send out an agenda tomorrow. With that, meeting adjourned.